I did want to thank Jerry for asking me to be a chairperson and a host this year. It was great for my morale at this time of my life, and it was also the most awesome experience to meet these two great people from Leland, Mississippi, Bob and Darla B. We've had a super time this whole weekend. We've laughed. We've just gotten along. I mean, Darla and I have so much in common, it's not even funny. She's a great lady, and I cannot wait to hear what she has to say. So please introduce with love, Darla B. from Leland, Mississippi.
Hey, everybody. I am Darla, and I am an alcoholic. Hey, y'all. Whew. We were seeing and sharing the love last night with Elvis Lane. Oh, Lord. I didn't go to sleep for a couple of hours after I got home. I was so excited. I thought I was going to have to call Jeanette because I was like, didn't know her number. No, Bub didn't want to talk about it. Oh, I've just had the best time. It's just been so, my cup is just full. Whew. I was really wanting to leave this morning because I'd had such a good time, but they said no, one more job to do. I said, okay. Thank you, committee, so much for having us. We were supposed to come last year and didn't get to because we were having a grandbaby, and she got here safely, and we're going to get to go see her in Kansas City before long. I don't usually back out of commitments. This program has taught me to be willing to do whatever, and it was difficult for me, and I called my sponsor. They kept changing the due dates on us, and she said family first. And then I've met Jerry before, and I thought, oh, I don't want to call him and tell him. And I put it off as long as I could, and so I called him, and he said family first. And I thought, it's okay. He said, can you come next year? And I said, sure. And here we are. Love, Linda. It's just like an old friend, and that's what I feel about Alcoholics Anonymous. You're just old friends. You're just people I haven't met yet. So I guess I got the thank yous out of the way. God will kick in here in a minute. I'll just keep talking until he does. Mama be so proud. I'm at the Baptist church on Sunday morning. I called her this morning. I always do. She's 92 and lives in Little Rock by herself and can't see hardly or hear. And I got off the phone. Bub said, did you tell her you're preaching this morning at the church? And I said, no, I just couldn't go there right yet, but I'll tell her later. But you better believe she'll be sitting at the Park Hill Baptist Church in North Little Rock this morning. Okay, seemed like something else I needed to say. Oh, I made this note. I've never made notes, but I made this note this morning so I'd remember what I'm doing. It says I'm Darla Alcoholic on it, and I've already torn it. And so anyway, and I had Linda's instructions on the back. So anyway, I think I woke up in the right bed this morning, and my hair, everything's about as best I can get it. Nothing unusual happened except with Elvis. We had fun. Let's see what else. I love the speaker Friday night. I may be bad with names, so if I get your name wrong, please forgive me. I hadn't had enough sleep. Joe, boy, I could really see his enthusiasm and his love for this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It just busted through. And, Kyle, he was just, woof, you know, from the heart. And then last night, of course, with Joe, just brought it all together. These people that have come before us are just something else, and I have so much respect and admiration for these people. And you'll see that I'm not calling myself an old-timer yet. My sobriety date is September the 16th, 1982, and where I got sober in Little Rock, Arkansas, we give our sobriety dates. We don't in Leland, Mississippi. But we do there. My home group is the Leland group in Leland, Mississippi, and I'm very thankful for that group. That's where I got into, that's a lie. Let me start over. I'm trying to be rigorously honest here. Well, when I moved to Leland from Little Rock, they weren't doing AA right down there. But they're doing it right today. Nothing to do with me, you know. It was just how I perceived it at the time. And my sponsor told me, they're doing fine down there, Darla, without you. Just shut your mouth. They'll just keep staying sober one day at a time. And she was so right. I grew up in North Little Rock, and my father was an alcoholic, and I just loved him so. Oh, my gosh. He was so exciting, just like we are. Just love alcoholics. I think we're so exciting and fun people. And I tell you, Elvis didn't know what he had a hold of last night. He thought he was in the Baptist church with all these blue hairs or something. I don't know. And for y'all that missed it, oh, and I promised myself I wasn't going to say that, dadgummit, because I remembered when I came in AA, I wouldn't go to a meeting every once in a while, and I'd call my sponsor, and he would, my sponsor's husband, he was the worst. He'd always give me assignments. I hated to get a hold of him. And he would say, boy, man, we had a good time last night. You know, it was so much fun. I'd just be thinking, oh, and he said, you missed it. And I'd say, what'd I miss? He said, we don't know what you needed to hear. He was just that great old AA. And, boy, it's still in my heart. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I woke up this morning and I said, thank you, God, I'm alive. Thank you, God, I'm sober. Thank you, Father, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My father... Recently, I haven't talked in a while. I used to talk quite a bit. My father was so precious, and he loved me almost into the grave because he had this illness too. And when I listened to Kyle yesterday, I could see that how I thought I was so powerful and had so much control in trying to do my dad's drinking and try to stop him from drinking. Had no idea I was alcoholic back then. I was terrified of alcohol. I said I would never drink because of what it had done in our home. I had no idea. I even told Kyle yesterday when I thanked him that I said when I'd sit at the Arkansas Razorback games when I was a little child, I'd hold my ring in my hand and I knew the Razorbacks would score if I had it in the right, correct hand, you know. I had that much control. And he said, well, that's not a bad thing with sports. But anyway, a typical day in our house is my dad would get drunk and throw cigarette ashes on the floor, and Mom would sit in the corner and read the Bible. So as I grew up, I just learned to get drunk and read the Bible all at the same time. My mom was scared of everything, and my dad would get drunk and try to show me that there was nothing to be afraid of. And he was a electrical contractor and very successful businessman and was a public speaker in our community. And he would go outside when there was an electrical storm, and he'd have a light plug, a socket thing on the end, a long lamp-looking thing, an electrical storm, and he'd be drunk, and he'd go out there and put that plug in his mouth during the storm to show me there was nothing to be afraid of. And my mom would come and get me and put me under the bed. I'm an only child, and that's probably an illness unto itself, but we're not going to talk about that today. And I still really sometimes am uncomfortable when it's bad weather because I'm not really sure what to do. You know, I got a lot of mixed messages growing up, and I was a hard child to raise. I was a worrier from the time I was little. I just carried my worry beads around and worry, and just scared to death about everything. And there was a lot of insanity going on in our house, but my reaction to it was just over the top. And I loved people so much from an early age, but I was terrified of people. I wasn't ever very smart in my mind. I wasn't a smart person. I know today that I was just always tied up inside. I could never concentrate on anything. I never could be where it was that I was doing what it was that I was doing. I was always thinking about something else. There was never living in the now and being a part of my own life. And these were things that happened to me before I ever started drinking. I think they probably should have taken me from the delivery room on over to AA, you know, now. But all these things, and I started going to therapy at the Arkansas Psychiatric Clinic when I was in ninth grade. So, you know, I started having emotional problems way before I started drinking. And I don't know. I've known a lot of alcoholics. I don't never known one of them that ever told me they didn't have an emotional problem of some sort, you know. I mean, and the alcohol just, it just did for me what I could not do for myself. I went through school. People liked me, but I never felt it inside. I believed in God. I grew up Baptist. I was dunked in one of these things when I was 9 years old. And, you know, maybe it kept me from killing myself. I don't really know. But I did love God. As a little girl, I'd write in my diary, "Thy will be done." It was always about some little boy. And I'd write in there, you know, "Thy will be done" about so-and-so. And then I'd go out and do whatever the heck I wanted to. It never connected. "Thy will be done" and trying to live a life that was like what it was supposed to be. And Baptist preachers scared me. They, back then, the Southern Baptists, I was talking to Louise or somebody about it the other day. I don't need anything to drink. I just like to keep stuff in my hands. I don't know what's wrong. But anyway, they would, you know, talk to me, the Baptist preachers, and they would beat on the, I don't know, how many of y'all are Baptist? They always say Baptists and Catholics have the hardest time getting sober. I don't know if that's true or not. But they would beat on the pulpit, you know, and I was a very sensitive child. And I was very, you know, people scared me. It scared me at home when there was violence and guns and knives and stuff in our house. And that's scary anyway for a kid, you know. But my mom had me give my dad Anabuse when I was a young child. Y'all remember Anabuse? And she didn't know. You know, I don't blame her. Everything that I'm telling you today is in retrospect from working these steps. And, you know, it's not my mom and dad's fault. I reacted terribly to situations. I was fearful, full of anxiety, and just a very hard child to raise. But she had me give him Anabuse before he was going to give a public talk one night. And he must have hidden it under his tongue, because he almost died. And I watched my dad almost die from what I had given him. And I was only about 10 or 11 or 12, I can't remember, but it did something down within my soul that I got terrified that I was going to hurt people or kill somebody. And I, you know, when you're drinking, you don't know what you're going to do. I was a blackout drinker. From the very start, went to Fayetteville to school. I didn't drink in high school. I was a goody two shoes and on the drill team and cheerleader and all that good stuff. And the people really liked me, but I never felt it in my heart. I always felt like my dad had a lot of money back then, and I felt like they were just being nice to me because he had money and that I was adopted. And I thought I was adopted, you know, just crazy stuff. It's just, you know, all stuff in between here. And this killing thing, when I would be in blackouts later on in my life, oh, the incomprehensible demoralization, the four horsemen would be on me, and I would wake up the next day and I wouldn't know where I'd been or what I'd done or who I'd been with, and to have to go back, I had my own detective service set up. Would have to go back and find these people. Oh, that's the last people you want to see, you know, to see if I'd hurt them or if I'd done anything wrong to them and if they were okay. And this, it was really guilt, you know, guilt from living the way that I was living, because I really hadn't been brought up to live that way. And when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, I heard a speaker say one time that he felt vaguely responsible for World War II, and I went, "I get that." I mean, I understand you guys. I know you know what you're talking about. But my high school counselor had told me not to go up to Fayetteville to school, that I'd be a little fish in a big pond, and I knew I was going because they partied up there and they had fun, and I wanted out of that crazy house, and she was so right. I went up there. I didn't make my grades. They'd have to carry me home from the rink. I'd always be drunk on the bathroom floor. It's cool down there. I don't know what it is about bathroom floors, but I'd be drunk, and they'd let, you know, drunk. They always say drunk, you know, not just drunk. Oh, you were just drunk. And so I was trying to make my grades. I was trying to go to school. I was trying to be a good Christian girl. But I just, once I started drinking, I couldn't stop. It was like there was instructions on the bottle that said, drink all this till it's gone, and then you get some more. And that's the way I did it. And everybody else's life seemed to be going on by. You know, they'd go to college and do what they were supposed to do and get married and have children. And I couldn't do that. I couldn't make my grades. I went to college for 8 years, and I never graduated. And my dad kept saying, go out there and check with them. I know you've graduated. And I said, well, I'm just too busy, you know, tied up inside. And I went through two marriages trying to find someone that I thought could take care of me and love me and make me feel good about myself, because I felt so bad about myself. And both of those marriages ended in divorce as a direct result of my alcoholism. I could never stick with anything. I could do anything for a little while. It was just that long road that they were running out there that I couldn't do. I bought a book one time that said, how do you make it from Monday till Friday? Because, you know, the weekends were fine. It was just that stretch of getting up every day and being responsible and doing what you're supposed to do. And so I stayed sick, drunk, and crazy as long as I could to keep from being responsible in this world, because I didn't know how to do it. And I tell you what, you know, I found out about myself, I'm really slick kind of person. I have to be real careful. That's why I need a sponsor today and a home group and everything the program has to offer, because I found out, you know, if you stay drunk long enough and sick long enough and crazy long enough, nobody expects anything of you. Oh, she's just drunk. Oh, she's just crazy. Don't pay any attention to her. So I have to be real careful in this program, because the program has taught me to be responsible, and it's taught me to do things that I never thought that I could possibly do in my whole life as a result of just trying to practice these simple steps in my life. But I went on, and I went to the Arkansas Psychiatric Clinic for 17 years out there. They'll keep you out there a long time and keep paying the money. And when I came in AA, I owed them $17,000, and all the men were gone that were paying my bills. My dad died as a result of this alcoholism, and that's just where it had to be for me to hit some kind of bottom. You know, all of us don't have to go down that far, but for me, all the men in my life had to be gone that took care of me before I would be willing to look at another way of life. I think in the program, it probably took me 10 years to pay off the Arkansas Psychiatric Clinic. I think it was Bill talking about financial amends or someone, and I would start writing on the little bill they would send me every month down at the bottom. I'm still sober. If you know anyone that's like me, have them call me. And they would have me meet these women, these shrinks would, all over Little Rock at Danvers and all these places, and I'd give them big books, and I don't know whatever happened to many of them, but, you know, I was able to stop going out there after 17 years of going out there. After that period of time in the program of working with a sponsor, after 9 months, my sponsor said, you know, y'all work it out. You know, if you can let go of it, let go of it. And I've never had to go back after all those years. And it took me 10 years. I'd pay them $50 every month. They said, you're going to get responsible for your bills. And so I finally got them paid off. And I kind of missed that bill after it quit coming, because it always reminded me of how sick I'd been. You know, every time I'd go out the mailbox and get it, I'd think, I'm having a bad day today. And then I'd think, no, you're not. You're not having a bad day. Not anything compared to what you've been going through, girl. So nothing straightened out in my life until God got me to Alcoholics Anonymous. Nothing got better. Everything got worse. and it was dark and black. My daddy was gone, who I loved with all my heart, and my mom and I just never really got along. We never really saw eye to eye on anything. And when he died the year before I got sober, and I stayed with her about a month, and I had some kind of little spiritual experience where I went to the Baptist church, and I wore a cross back before it was popular. You know, we always do everything in extremes, but I knew in the back of my mind I was going to drink again. I knew I was just making it through, trying to help her out a little bit for a month, and I was going to drink again. I was just putting it off. And I didn't feel like I fit in with those Baptist people, but I kept on trying to go out there. And when my dad died, I was a little bit sober. I used to think if I just hadn't had a drink that day, I was sober, you know. And I remember being at work, you know, and alcohol just be pouring out of my body. You know that smell. And people would come up, you know, and they'd like back up. You know, and I'd think, what's wrong with these people? They could smell that stuff, you know, coming out of me. But anyway, I called this man one night, and we started drinking, and I knew I was going to be off and running again. And in September of 1982, I had been at the shrink's office, and they used to tell me, you know, go and confront your mother-in-law, your ex-mother-in-law, because I was always a scared kind of little critter, and alcohol gave me so much courage. And they would tell me, this was way back then, before all the good information about alcoholism, and I'm not knocking shrinks or churches or anything, but this is just what happened to me. And they would tell me back then, you know, have a couple of drinks and relax. I think, God, do I need to relax? And they'd say, go confront your mother-in-law. And I'd say, well, the part they didn't get was that I had to have a few drinks before I would go over there and confront my mother-in-law, because I was too scared to tell you what I thought. And then guess what? After that, you know the rest of the story. I'd be drunk by the time I'd get over there, or after I'd get there, because I was pretty scared to drive a car because I didn't want to kill anybody. So I used a lot of men to drive me around and take me places. And, of course, I couldn't see that at the time, but I used the men to take me places because, you know, you kill somebody in the car if you have to, but I'm not going to. You know, I can't live with killing anybody. So all of that time was just, I don't know how really that I lived through it, except that God kept me alive to be able to get to you all. And on September the 15th of that year, I had gone to work that morning, and it's just like all of us sitting here, you know, right now, you kind of know, you know, when something's changing, but you don't really know exactly what's happening. But I knew I couldn't live the way that I was living anymore. And my dad was gone. All my enablers were gone. No more money. I was not employable. All the feelings that I had drank up, I was just walking around like a dead person. I was too afraid to feel anything, too afraid to try to be responsible or participate in my own life. And alcohol did all of that for me until it quit working. And then I was left with every defect that I've ever had amplified 10,000 times. And it's just like God says, this one's ready. I never went to treatment. God, I hate that. You know, I really do. I never was institutionalized. I just don't get it. I asked my sponsor after I'd come in the program, I said, Ann got to go to treatment. And she'd been sober 4 years and got to go. You know, why does she get to go? And I have to keep going to work and going to meetings and living this life out here, you know, trying to find something. I said, how come did Ann get to go? And she said, well, darling, you were so bad, nobody knew when you got worse. And she's a wonderful sponsor. Y'all would love her. She had helped me to get to the God that loves me so much today, but she is so tough, and I'm so thankful because I can't hear anybody unless they holler at me sometimes. Now, I sponsor some women. If I did that too, they would be like little birds and run away. So, you know, each case is different, but I was one of the ones that you had to shake your finger in their face and say what you have to say to them. And she said a lot of things to me that she hadn't have said them. And I know God used her. I know God works through people. And she told me, she said, darling, you're not crazy. She said, you're not. She said, you know how to act crazy, but you're not crazy. No one had ever told me that before. She said, if you take the actions of this program, your thinking will change. And all those years I'd stayed out there at the Arkansas Psychiatric Clinic, they kept trying to figure out what was wrong with my thinking. You know, and all the history of poor me, poor my dad was a drunk and I had these two bad marriages and my mama and, you know, all the stuff. My dad lost the business and, you know, and I loved all that, you know. I loved it. I'd go around to people and try to make them feel sorry for me. And I'd go to 10 different people and I'd get 10 different answers. And then I was more screwed up than ever. You know, it's please tell me what to do. Tell me what to do. That's what I always did. And then I'd get the answer that I liked the best. And that's the one that I'd do. I was full of self-will. I was self-will run riot and didn't know it. And so my cousin, the only person I knew in AA, came to talk to me. He called me that morning about real estate. He didn't call me about AA. It was just my time. I was ready. And I didn't know I was ready. And I said, James, I said, I think I have a drinking problem. Are you surprised? He said, good God, no, Darla. He said, I've seen you drink so much, you can't quit. And I said, ooh, I didn't know I thought I'd hidden it a little better than that. I said, well, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And he said, well, I'm going to bring you a copy of the big book, and you read it in 3 days, and then you tell me if you're alcoholic or not. The amazing thing about that was that I couldn't even read. I couldn't even hold sentences together. I was so sick. And some way or another, I sat down in my grandmother's living room, because everything was always about looks, you know, kind of what Joe was talking about, as long as everything looked all right, you know. And I looked all right because my aunt had a dress shop and they gave me pretty clothes and I had a car and a nice house, you know. But you weren't going to be around me long before craziness was oozing out all over. And I read that big book I read it in 2 days because I like to do everything fast. And I called up James and I said, James, I'm an alcoholic. What do we do? He said, well, here in Little Rock, men don't sponsor women. He said, but I'll give you the name of a lady and she will help you. And he gave me my Margaret's name. And I knew the jig was up. I knew I'd thrown in the towel and I didn't even know. I just knew I had to get out of the hell that I was living in. I was so tired of people looking at me like, oh no, you've messed up again. You know, I couldn't understand. I couldn't have children. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't work. I couldn't finish school. And he said, this lady will help you. And she met me at a meeting at Cosmopolitan that night. And when I walked in, there were about this many people there. And they were all laughing and having fun. And I really thought y'all were drinking. And I had on a sweater that you could see through. And my hair was standing up on end, they said. And I had eczema all over me and this see-through sweater on. I wonder how they know we're new. And she grabbed me by my little see-through sweater, and she said, I don't want you to have an emotional involvement for a while. I said, don't worry about it. I don't like men. And I know I didn't like the way I used men and what I did with men. It wasn't that I didn't like men, but I didn't know all that then. And my Margaret got me over to her house, and she put her little finger on the big book, and she said, Darla, are you willing to go to any lengths to get sober? And I didn't know what she meant. And I asked her if she'd sponsor me that night, which is most unusual for me. I don't do things like that. I like to do it my way till it nearly kills me and everybody else. And I said, I looked down there and I said, yes, I'm willing to do, I don't want to live the way I've been living. And so she said, let's start in the steps. We were in Joe McQuinney and Joe and Charlie country. I don't know if y'all have ever heard of the Joe and Charlie tapes, but in 1982, that was part of my assignment from my sponsor, was to go and hear Joe speak every Monday night at Wolf Street, because I didn't know, you know, just Black Joe to me, you know. I didn't know how fortunate that I was to be able to be brought up on the big book with Joe McQuinney. I had no idea. But I'd sit down there every Monday night because I didn't want to live the way I'd been living, and I did everything she told me to do to the best of my ability pretty much that first year. And I was terrified still. And on my first birthday cake, they put on there, God did it, and I don't know, because that's all I said the first year. I couldn't believe I wasn't drinking. And I'd mark off my calendar every day, hadn't had a drink today, hadn't had a drink today. And then one day I just quit marking it off. You know, God removed that obsession somewhere after the eighth and ninth step, and it's never come back. And I'll have 28 years shortly, God willing. Wow. You know, what a deal. What a deal. So I would sit down there and listen to Joe and listen to those 12 steps being done. And I had eczema all over me because of all my anxiety and fear. And my sponsor looked at me at the beginning and she said, "Darla, I think if you do these steps and you surrender your life to God and you do what I ask you to do and you try to find out what's wrong with inside of you and you try to help others and you try to do this deal," as she called it. She said, "One day I think all that'll be gone." I thought, all right. Like after all the money my parents had spent at the dermatology clinic and standing in light boxes and all kinds of stuff. And we were sitting down there on my birthday at Wolf Street and I didn't even realize it. I had my little hands in my lap. And she said, "Look at your hands." She had a tear rolling down her face. And I looked down. I said, "What?" She said, "It's gone." And I was like, I didn't even realize it had happened. And that's the way this program has worked in my life. As long as I'm doing this over here, things happen over here. And I don't even know when it happens. And the defects do go off and change costumes. And they do come back. I love that. But, you know, we have this way that every day that when I get afraid, I can say, "God, please remove my fear and direct my attention to what you would have me to be." When I get anxious or angry or any of those things, my help has to come from God. And if you're new sitting out there this morning, I hope that I've shown you that someone that was as sick as I was can be transformed through this program with just a degree of willingness, because I certainly have not done it perfect and I never will. It says if and when we need to make amends, not if we need to. I need to make them a lot, but it's the best life that I've ever been given. I heard a speaker say one time, he's passed away now, his name was Sam, he was 6'4". And he said he was walking with his little grandson down by the railroad track one day. And his little grandson was holding his hand. And he looked up at him and he said, "Poppy, this doesn't look like much fun, but it is." And that's the way I feel about Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't look like much fun, but it is. You know, because we have really recovered and we've been given a new way of life and a new way to live. And we're so anxious and ready to give it to anybody that wants it. I've been working with this new girl for this last year. My husband and I've just, I don't know. You love them all. You want them all to get sober. I've lost 3 to death. I was sponsoring them, broke my heart. Seems like I always had to speak, and my husband too, he's lost 2 to death right after I lost one of them. And I just so thankful I didn't have to lose one this time, because it's so hard to lose one and speak because your heart is just so heavy. But the one that they all take my heart, but every once in a while one will come along that's as sick as me, as I was when I came in, and they really take your heart. And this one did. And she almost died. I'm sorry I'm so emotional, y'all. I don't really care. It's my party. I'll cry if I want to. But anyway, she really has just taken my heart. And she's almost died once this year. And she'll have 6 months in about a week now. She texts. You know, all these young ones, they know how to text. And I was telling Jeanette, she taught me how. So now I'm obsessive about that. You know, I have to text and text. But anyway, she sent me a text message this morning. She knew I was speaking. She sent me a text message this morning and it said, "God is with you." Okay. It's going to be all right. Because that's what I said almost my whole first year of sobriety. God is with me, God is with me, God is with me, God is with me, God is with me. My 5th year of sobriety was just as difficult as someone else talked about. I got my focus off of God. You know, all these great things start happening and then all of a sudden, you know, it becomes about the job, the man, where you live, you know, all this stuff. And this doesn't have to happen to everybody, but within my 5th year of sobriety, my husband, thank you for coming with me. I love you. But he doesn't like this part of the story, but I'm gonna wrap it up pretty soon. But anyway, he did, this is true. He doesn't get to speak, but he really did. I know y'all gonna find it hard, as darling and as wonderful as I am, But he did decide he didn't want to marry me. Showed him, huh? But no, I didn't do it. God did it. So, but anyway, he decided that we shouldn't get married right then. And it just broke my heart because I thought it was God's will. And I had about 5 years and he had a year and a half or 2-3 years. And we had been dating a while and he decided it wasn't time. My job, they decided they didn't need me anymore, and they came to my door one day at my apartment. This all happened within a month's period of time, and knocked on my door, and they said, "You're going to have to buy this as a condominium because we're no longer going to have them as apartments." And I had just gotten myself back on my feet. I could pay my bills. God had allowed me to be responsible and have a job and do what I was supposed to do. I bought myself a little car, and my sponsor made me a budget, and we did all these things. But I had started thinking more about the man and the job and the apartment. And I don't think now that God was being mean to me in any way. I think it was just one more time. It was like, "Darling, you've turned your will and your life over to my care. Now let me direct your life. Lean on me, lean on me, lean on me." And all these things were taken out of my life. And guess what I did? I cried at every AA meeting that I went to, but I went to every AA meeting. I went, and I went out, and I looked at jobs, and I called my sponsor every day, and I did everything that she asked me to do. And I could not get hired. I could not get hired. And I didn't have money. A lady in the program let me move in with her, but I just kept going to the meetings and trying to do this deal. And I would just, sometimes I'd be so full of anxiety, I couldn't even put my clothes on because I didn't know where my next meal was coming from. But it was just trusting God, trusting God, trusting God. Just keep doing it, keep doing it, whether you want to do it or not. You've seen it happen in people's lives. It'll happen for you. So I told God, sometimes I get to giving him instructions. And so one night I told him before I went to a meeting, I said, "God, I'll go to this one more meeting. I'll make it to one more meeting, but I can't make it much after that. You're going to have to do something." I got to that meeting at my home group at Pinnacle Mountain that night, and a man that I knew that had been in my home group years before that was there, and he had moved back from Florida. And he said, "Hey, I want to take you to dinner after the meeting." And I said, "I can't go. I don't have any money. You know, this rigorous honesty." He said, "I'll buy your meal." You know? And so, anyway, long story short on that deal, he said, "Darla, I'm the new president at this company here, and I want to hire you. Will you come and sell for me?" And that's the way my life has happened. I want to talk about service for about 5 minutes, and then I'll wrap it up. My husband and I have a wonderful life. We've been married 21 years, August 6th. Both of my other marriages were five-year marriages. So when I passed that five-year point, I knew the program worked. I thought I was just a five-year girl, you know. But the service part of it, my sponsor said, go to your business meetings at your home group. You be where they are having information about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was so crazy, you know. I was so crazy. But I'd go to those business meetings. I'd do what she said do. And I think I started out as a secretary and then a treasurer, and I don't know. Then I was elected GSR, and I just couldn't believe those people trusted me. I couldn't believe that they, you know, it's such a safe place to mess up. And I heard Don or somebody saying the other day, you know, he said something about being the voice. I was voice once at our roundup, and I loved it. The hardest part for me was figuring out what to wear. I was like, "Oh gosh, what am I going to wear now?" You know, the next time. But you know, when you learn what you're doing, they don't let you do it anymore. That's just the greatest thing about it, because they don't want any bosses around here. So I started going to district and the area, and just, you know, it says recovery, unity, service. And service is all kinds of facets, you know. God happened to put me into the general service part of it. It says it's not for all of us, but you know, I really think it should be. I've grown so much in trying to serve this fellowship in any kind of way. I've learned how to take a little bit care of my money. I've learned how to take notes. I've been, as a result of all the service you all have allowed me to do, I've been president of the Board of Realtors in my area and president of the Chamber of Commerce in my area. I couldn't have ever done anything if you all had not shown me. But my life is Alcoholics Anonymous. It gets me back into the mainstream, but I will always my base, because without Alcoholics Anonymous, I have nothing. And I tell you all of those things so you'd be proud of the program. You know, I'm not a miracle. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous is the miracle. And instead of saying, work the program, lately I've been saying, it works if you work it. I've been saying to myself, Darla, let the program work. Let the program work. Cease fighting anyone or anything. And I know keep coming back was a big thing, and I say keep coming back, but what I'm going to say to you today is stay. Just stay. There's a whole lot more things that I wanted to say, but our little bottoms can't take it. One more story for Joyce. She's the airline person. I've walked through so many fears in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. One biggie was going to doctors, and so I finally turned 60 a year ago, and I finally got a checkup and did all that stuff like I was supposed to do, you know, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I still don't like flying. I will if I have to. Joyce is a flight attendant, and she was telling me all about it earlier. But anyway, I was elected delegate for the state of Mississippi in 2000, I think it was, at the General Service Office in New York, and I got to go there twice to the General Service Conference in April. And I was just, when I got elected, I thought, oh, I can't believe they trust me. Don't they know, you know, I can't believe they trust me to do this. But it was all because my sponsor said, be willing. I was no big deal, and I'm still no big deal. It's service is about work and helping this fellowship that we love so much, not about anybody being a big deal. The more, if you want to call a delegate being something special, that's more of a servant. You know, you become more of a servant at every level. But what it did for me was get me out of myself and help me try to help others. And that's what I needed, because I get so into myself. And I have to have everything that the program has to offer. Service has changed my life in so many ways. But when I was elected, I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to fly to New York City. So anyway, I flew to New York City by myself. Bub couldn't go. His father was terminally ill, and it was just the timing wasn't right. I knew it was God and me kind of thing. And I only went because I knew that the faith that you all had given me, that it was going to be okay. And I got into LaGuardia, and there were just people going every which way. It seemed like everything was in fast motion, fast speed. And I said, God, I've gone as far as I can go. I'm going to sit down right here in the middle of the floor. And I sat down right in the floor there at LaGuardia, and over about 300 people, I heard this man yelling, Mississippi, Mississippi. And I'd met him at some kind of, you know, event 2 or 3 years before. And he was a delegate from North Carolina. And he said, come on, I'll get you there. And he put his arm around me. He said, we're going to make it. And I said, that's the way the program works. Just when I give up, and I say, I can't do it anymore, God moves in. So I'm going to say to all of y'all, and especially you new ones, just stick right in there like a tick on a hound dog until the miracle happens. I love y'all. Thanks.